बुद्ध कॉल्ड हिज कम्युनिटी द संघ. बुद्ध सेज टू हिज डिसाइपल्स टू सीक थ्री रिफ्यूजेस. व्हेन एनीबडी कम्स टू सरेंडर ही हैज टू सरेंडर टू थ्री थिंग्स. ही सेज आई सरेंडर टू बुद्ध, आई सरेंडर टू संघ, आई सरेंडर टू धम्म. बुद्ध इज द अलाइव, द प्रेजेंस हियर नाउ, बट ही विल नॉट बी देयर ऑलवेज. सूनर और लेटर ही विल डिसअपियर जस्ट एज अ लैम्प डिसअपियर्स एंड देन यू कैन नॉट फाइंड वेयर द फ्लेम हैज गॉन. बुद्ध विल डिसअपियर. दिस बॉडी कैन नॉट कंटेन हिम फॉर लॉन्ग बिकॉज द बॉडी इज इमॉर्टल एंड ही इज इमॉर्टल. द व्हीकल इज वीक. द व्हीकल कैन नॉट परसिस्ट फॉर लॉन्ग. Sooner or later, the body will fall and the flame will disappear. Then to whom you will surrender? So Buddha says, I am creating a community, the Sangha. Sangha is a community of those who live with the same attitude, who live a life in common, who commune with each other. It is a community. Community of seekers on the same path. Community of those who have been in love with the same Buddha, whose love joins them together.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Osho Radio. As you heard, we started the program with some words Osho was saying about the Sangha, the community of those living together in the love for the Master. In today's program, you're going to hear a discourse by Osho and wonderful music, instrumental music and vocal music from musicians from the world of Osho. If you listen to the discourse, if you really listen, I'm sure you can have that experience of being with the Master right there in your home. Just sit back and relax and take it all in. Enjoy.
Nom tananu tadare tani de dim tana dere na
nom tananu tadare tani de dim tana dere na
nom tananu tadare tani de
thank you.
dare tani de
In the following discourse, that is from the series I Am That, number 2, Osho answers a question from somebody who wants to know what is the relationship in the Hindu religion between the Upanishads and the Vedas. Osho says, the Upanishads have no relationship with the Vedas. They are a totally new beginning. Unfortunately, these days, we still have to deal with the religions or what is left of them. They are in our blood and in our veins. We have to free ourselves completely, Osho says, from our past traditions. Imagine sitting in Osho's presence while listening to the discourse and let yourself be caught by the unpredictability of his words.
The second question. Bhagwan, your discourse on Isopanishad was so beautiful. I have heard it said that the Upanishads are commentaries on, are extensions of the Vedas. Is this true? The Upanishads are not commentaries on the Vedas. Neither are they extensions of the Vedas. Of course, Hindus go on insisting that they are commentaries or extensions of the Vedas. But that is a falsehood perpetuated by the priesthood for their own reasons. In fact, Upanishads are rebellions against the Vedas. Another name for the Upanishads is Vedant. The priests have been saying that Vedanta means the culmination of the Vedas. The word can be interpreted that way. But in fact it means the end of the Vedas and the beginning of something absolutely new. Vedas are very ordinary compared to the Upanishads. The Upanishads say that there are two kinds of knowledges, the lower and the higher. The lower knowledge is the realm of the priesthood, the scholars, the pandits. And the higher knowledge is the world of the Buddhas, of the awakened ones. The priest is a businessman. His whole effort is to exploit people in the name of religion. He oppresses people, dominates people. And of course he goes on saying it is for your own sake. He makes people afraid of hell and greedy for heavenly joys. This is a psychological trick. He knows people are afraid. He knows people are greedy. So these are the two things that he goes on manipulating: fear and greed. And this is done by all the priests of all the religions, in all the traditions, all over the world. The Vedas are full of prayers, asking for worldly things, better crops, better cows, more money, better health, fame, power, prestige. Not only that, the Vedas are continuously praying to destroy the enemies, to destroy those who oppose us. They are full of jealousy, anger, violence. They have nothing to do with the Upanishads. Upanishads are not commentaries, and they are not the culmination of the Vedas either. Upanishads are a totally new beginning. The very word Upanishad is of immense importance. The word Upanishad is derived from the Sanskrit root sad. Sad Sad has many meanings and all are significant. The first meaning is to sit. The Zen people say, sitting silently, doing nothing. The spring comes and the grass grows by itself. That is the meaning of sad. Just sitting silently in deep meditation. Not only sitting physically, but sitting deep down psychologically too. You can sit physically in a yoga posture, but the mind goes on running, chasing. Then it is not true sitting. Yes, physically, you look still, but psychologically, you are running in all the directions. Sad means sitting physically and psychologically both. Because body and mind are not two things, not two separate entities. Body and mind is one reality. We should not use the phrase body and mind. We should make one word, body-mind. The body is the outer cell of the mind, and the mind is the inner part of the body. Unless both are in a sitting posture, not running anywhere into the past, into the future, not running anywhere, just being in the present, now and here. That is the meaning of sad. It is the very meaning of meditation. It also means to settle. You are always in a chaos, in a state of turmoil, unsettled. Always hesitating, confused, not knowing what to do, what not to do. There is no clarity inside. So many clouds, so much smoke surrounds you. When all these clouds have disappeared, when all this chaos has disappeared, when there is no confusion at all, it is called settling. When one is settled absolutely, clarity arises, a new perspective. One starts seeing what is the case. Eyes are no more covered by any smoke. For the first time you have eyes to see that which is. The third meaning of sad is to approach. You are confused. You are living in darkness. You don't know who you are. You don't know the meaning of your life, of your existence. You have to approach somebody who has arrived home, who has found the way. You have to approach a Buddha, an enlightened master, a Lao Tzu, a Zarathustra, a Jesus, a Muhammad. You have to approach somebody who is afire with God, a flame, who is radiating godliness, in whose presence you feel bathed, refreshed, in whose presence something starts falling from your heart, the whole burden, anguish, anxiety, and something starts welling up within you, a new joy, a new insight. Hence the meaning to approach. Upanishad is made of three words, Shad is to sit, to settle, to approach. To approach a master, to sit by his side in a settled, silent state, and from the prefix upa, which means near, close, in tune with, in harmony, in communion. When you are settled, sitting silently by the side of the master, doing nothing, running nowhere, then a harmony arises between you and the master, a closeness, an intimacy, a nearness, a possibility of communion, the meeting of the heart with the heart, the meeting of the being with the being, a merging, a communion. And ni, meaning down, surrendered, in a state of prayer, in a state of egolessness. This is the whole meaning of the word Upanishad. Sitting in a settled state, unconfused, clear, approaching the master in egolessness, surrender, in a deep prayerfulness, openness, vulnerability, so that a communion becomes possible. This is Upanishad, what is happening right now between you and me. This sitting silently in a deep, loving, prayerful mood, listening to me, not through the intellect, but through the heart, drinking, not only listening, This communion is Upanishad. We are living Upanishad. And that is the only way to understand what Upanishads are. It has to become an alive experience for you. The Vedas consist of all kinds of knowledge of those days. They are a kind of Encyclopedia Britannica, of course, very primitive. At least 10,000 years old, at least it is possible they are far more older. Scholars are not decided. There is great controversy about the time when Vedas were composed. The possibility is they were not composed at one period. They were composed at different periods. There are people who say they are at least 90,000 years old. So from 90,000 years to 10,000 years, a long stretch of time, they contain all kinds of things, all kinds of informations of those days. Upanishads are pure religiousness, nothing else. Each single word is a finger pointing to the moon. They are not compilations of all kinds of knowledge. Their whole insistence is for immediate experience of that which is. The emphasis is on direct experience, not borrowed, not from scriptures, not from others. It has to be your own truth, only then it liberates. Jesus says truth liberates, certainly. Truth liberates, but it has to be your own. If it is somebody else, then rather than liberating, it imprisons. Christians are imprisoned. Jesus is liberated. Hindus are imprisoned. Krishna is liberated. Buddhists are imprisoned. Buddha is liberated. Liberation comes by experiencing the truth on your own. It has not to be just an accumulation of information. It has to be an inner transformation. The emphasis of the Upanishads is for immediate and direct experience of godliness. And why borrow when it is possible to drink directly from the source? But information seems to be cheap. Transformation seems to be arduous. Transformation means you will have to go through a great inner revolution. Information requires no revolution in you, no radical change in you. Information simply is an addition. Whatsoever you are, you remain the same, but you become more and more knowledgeable. Knowledgeability is not wisdom. Knowledgeability is, on the contrary, a hindrance to wisdom. The more knowledgeable you become, the less is the possibility of attaining your own experience. Because knowledge deceives. It deceives others. It deceives you. It goes on giving you the sense as if you know. But that as if has not to be forgotten. That as if can easily be forgotten and one can be deceived. Remember one very significant saying in the Upanishads. Those who are ignorant, they are bound to be lost in darkness. And those who are knowledgeable, they are bound to be lost in a far more and far bigger darkness than the ignorant ones. The ignorant person is at least sincere. He knows that he does not know. At least this much truth is there. But the knowledgeable covers up his wounds, his ignorance, his black holes. He covers them by scriptures. And he starts pretending that he knows. He's harming others, but that is secondary. Far more significant is that he is harming himself. He will be lost in a far deeper darkness. That's why it is very difficult for pundits, scholars, the so-called learned people to become enlightened. It is a miracle, if it happens at all. Sinners are more easily ready to go through the transformation because they have nothing to lose except their chains, except their ignorance. But the knowledgeable person is afraid to lose his knowledge. That is his treasure. He clings to it. He protects it in every possible way. He finds rationalizations, excuses, why the knowledge has to be protected. But in fact, by protecting his knowledge, he is simply protecting his ignorance. Hidden behind knowledge is his ignorance. The knowledge is just a mask which covers his original face. You cannot see his original face. He himself cannot see it. He is wearing a mask and looking in the mirror. He thinks, this is my original face. It is very difficult for the knowledgeable to drop his knowledge and to become ignorant again. Unless he gathers that much courage of becoming ignorant again, of becoming like a child again, innocent, not knowing anything,
what Dionysius calls agnosia, moving into a state of not knowing, it is certainly very arduous for the knowledgeable person. His whole life he has been accumulating knowledge. He has wasted his whole life. He has invested his whole life in knowledge. How can he drop it? So he protects it. He fights for it. And this is the most amazing thing in the world. The prisoner is fighting so that you cannot take him out of the prison. And of course, he is very clever and very cunning. So he can play with words and he can quote scriptures. But all his quotations are parrot-like. He has no understanding. The Upanishads emphasize direct experiencing. The Vedas belong to the priests, to the scholars, to the Brahmins, who are the oldest priests in the world. And of course, because they are the oldest, they are the most cunning in the whole world. No other religion can defeat the Hindu priest. Obviously, he has lived for so long, he has become very clever in exploiting. He has become very cunning in rationalizing, in protecting. Upanishads are a totally different dimension. Of course, they don't speak the language of rebellion. They are very soft. But the rebellion is there. Because Upanishads could not create the revolution, Buddha had to speak in a harsher tone. Buddha speaks the same truth as the Upanishads, but his way has changed. Seeing that Upanishads have failed to have any impact, because the priests started managing Upanishads also, and they started talking that Upanishads are nothing but commentaries on the Vedas. Buddha had to be more alert. He was not so soft as the Upanishads. Of course, his message is the same. But 2,000-3,000 years have passed since the Upanishads were composed. And one thing Buddha had become absolutely clear, that you have to be very harsh, very harsh. He has sharpened his sword. 25 centuries have again passed, the same period. Upanishads and Buddha are divided by 25 centuries. Between me and Buddha, again 25 centuries have passed. I have to sharpen my sword even more, because Buddha has also failed. The ignorance of man is so deep, and the priests are so cunning, that one has to be really hard. If one has compassion, one has to be cruel. only then this whole stupidity that exists in the name of religion can be destroyed and man can be freed. Man needs freedom from all cages, from all fetters.
This was Osho Radio for today. The music you heard was by Narayani from her CD The Power From Within, and the song was called Wherever Life Takes Me. Then there was Manish and Richa with their song about Mira. Before and after the discourse, you heard music from the world of Osho from the CD Commentaries of the Bamboo, and we will finish with a song by Milarepa Narayani called Fly Into Forever. Goodbye, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the program. Stay tuned to Osho Radio. Take care and namaste.
See forever. There's not a cloud in the sky of my mind. I have no doubt. This is my time to fly. Fly into forever. Now I can fly. Fly into forever. I can fly, fly into forever. I find that love is more than enough. I find that life gives me all that I need to fly. Fly into forever. There's not a cloud in the sky of my mind. I have no doubt this is my time to fly. Fly into forever.
Community is a group. When the Buddha is there, you can look at him. He can be helpful. He can guide you. He can take you out of your misery and darkness. But when he is gone, then there is only one possibility. You should join together to help each other. Few will be a little ahead. Few may be lagging behind. Few may be marching forcibly, few may be just fast asleep, But if it is a community, then those who are lagging behind, they can also be helped. Their care, the community can take. The community can think about them, can love them, can help them, can guide them. When a Buddha is alive, there is no need. But when the Buddha is gone, a community is the only refuge. This community is not the church, remember. This community is not a sect, remember. This community is a family of fellow seekers, not of fellow believers. When you believe, the community becomes a sect. When you seek, then it is community. A community is an alive phenomena of those who are all seeking together and helping each other.